To participate, you can call during caller segments at 888-24-LIBERTY. That's 888-245-4237. Or you can go to our online audience participation center at www.freedom21santacruz.net/radio. That's freedom21santacruz.net/radio. Now let's start advancing freedom.
Well, good evening to the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio show. First big announcement tonight that my co-host Roy Avila and I want to announce is the fact that we've got four more tremendous hours of the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio show.
What?
Well, we at Freedom 21 Santa Cruz are going to take our focus on the fight against sustainable development to another arena. Here locally, things have really made a sudden comeback. All of the consensus councils pretty much have gone underground for maybe 3 years or so. But boy, they've launched out with the new ones now, and this is going to be a taken down sustainable community in no time if the public doesn't catch some awareness.
And it's happening here, and it's happening in your neighborhood.
Well, that's right. And what we like to do here and have been doing for, 27 months now, is announcing to the rest of the country how the prototypical sustainable community gets made and practiced and molded. And of course, what they learn in places like Santa Cruz is how to do it elsewhere. And it's going on everywhere. And that's why the audience to the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio show has grown. And the understanding of these dynamics has spread, but nowhere near far enough. So join in. You know, life is going to be what it is, and all we want to do is assure the outcome is a good one.
And stay connected to us. There's a way to stay connected to us. Go to the F21SC.net webpage, sign up for our bulletin, and we'll keep you up to date on what we're doing and how we're taking it to them, so to speak.
Well, it's not so much what we're doing. It's what the issues in America at the local level, because it's a global local program that has infected every county in America with the sustainable development diatribe. I mean, this is the squashing of the vision that is the experience of America for 10 generations. So it is something that we've talked about for 27 months. We're going to keep focusing on it, continue to write about it. We'll be on radios, but we're not going to take on the ongoing weekly show as we have been here. You know, it's with great appreciation that Freedom 21 radio team thanks Dr. Stanley Montes and Radio Liberty for making available to the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz the resources of Radio Liberty broadcast facilities and this global network. Our collection over 27 months of broadcasting includes an array of digitized shows that assess the tyrannical demise of America by the political globalist anti-private property forces of the new sustainable world order. Now, the shows are available in CD, they're online, and they're available for you for re-airing in your community. You know, one of the loneliest spots to be, it seems, is if you're sitting someplace and you don't know anybody else who's understanding the dynamic behind sustainable development. Well, we're going to try to do a four-hour finale here at this edition of the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio efforts. With tonight, we've got four guests. You don't want to miss any section of tonight's show. First, it's Charlotte Izerbeet. Then we have Dr. Stephen Yates. And in the second hour, we have Robert Theobald of England and Patrick Wood of the August Review. Now, all these people have been guests on our shows before, and tonight we're going to focus on some, certainly.
So buckle in.
Yeah, buckle in. Okay, here we go.
We're going to take a quick break, and we'll come back with our next guest. Welcome back to the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio program. In case you want to participate in these final 4 hours, 888-245-4237. Our first guest is
Charlotte Izerbeet, dumbingdownamerica.com, a former education official in the Reagan administration. Before that, with the Foreign Service on behalf of the United States government. And author of Dumbing Down, which is the book to describe the government school systems of modern day and the consequences to the children that are affected by these schools.
So listen up, parents. Charlotte?
Hi.
How are you? It is such a reward to have you on the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio show.
Well, thank you very much. I consider it quite an honor, considering the incredible work you guys have been doing out there, and gals probably on the West Coast. I wish we had the same thing here.
Well, a revival is around the corner, because I'll tell you, if a revival's not around the corner, tyranny is. And there won't be an in-between those two positions. This balanced half-and-half economy is not set to last. Charlotte, did we lose Charlotte?
Yeah, I think I'm going to get on the other. This is a better line right here, okay?
Fine.
Right with you. Yeah, what you said was, you know, if we don't turn this corner the right way, we're going to be in major trouble. I think we've got, after I talked to you, I was thinking about the key element here of going around the corner is it would be nice if we had the traditional conservative movement with us. And unfortunately, we really don't any longer. They are not helpful at all. And I'm sure we're not going to go into that one tonight, but that's an extremely important factor.
Well, I think it's worth comment. We've done work at Freedom 21 showing in a graphic form how the left and the right really combine to the same position. And and so we're not in a left-right dynamic. We're really a left-right partnership that has a war, open war, on human independence.
Yes, it's very sad. I mean, especially, I'm a lot older than you are probably, but I started out with those people in the 70s, and I was really taken to the cleaners. I mean, it took me 20 years to figure out how far down the line they'd taken. I mean, not me, but how I was deceived by these people that led me to believe they really did care about free enterprise. But you know what?
Hold that thought for a second, Charlotte. We'll be right back.
Okay.
21 Santa Cruz Radio. Well, welcome back to the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz Radio Show. And for those who are away on commercial break, our guest, Charlotte Iserbeet, has been describing the background that leads to a fast-changing world, and not in the context of seeking improvement, but in the context of bringing about a global form of tyranny, the likes of which most Americans have not yet taken consideration of. Is that a fair analysis of where we are and where we're going, Charlotte?
Oh, absolutely. I just think it's horrible. Every single, as we talked earlier, just about every plank in the Communist Manifesto, believe it or not, is being carried out and in our country by Christian conservatives. And with the left doesn't have to do much anymore because they've got this tremendous assistance from the people that I used to work with that I thought were, you know, really God-fearing, good Americans who believed in the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, and you know, George Washington's admonition beware of foreign entanglements, and et cetera, et cetera. I could go on and on and on. So, but it is true that we have been betrayed by our own people, and
well,
these
people, it strikes me, have fallen. They simply have bought into the momentary pleasure that benefits them from proposing concepts like public-private partnership.
Yes, well, I was right there when it happened, and I was so shocked. I was in the right in the middle of it, having been appointed liaison with the White House during the first administration. I was the Department of Education liaison with the White House for public-private partnerships.
Right.
And
way back then.
Yes, and I asked this lovely lady in the White House from California, you might know her, but I'm not going to mention her name, but I said, I don't understand what's going on here, and I'm not highly educated, but isn't this corporate fascism?
Well, that's exactly what Mussolini's economics were.
Yeah, and I remember at the time there was a think tank set up, I think that Caspar Weinberger and Ed Meese etc. There was an article in the Washington Post about it, about how we had to shed our aversion to socialism, and we had to follow the Japanese pattern. I remember, I have that article. In fact, it's in my book, The Deliberate Dumbing Down of America. And so it wasn't just my being the liaison with the White House. There was a conscious effort being made back in the early 80s to change our economic system. And sorry to say that. And the other, I remember a conference in Washington in the mid-70s with the American Conservative Union, where I asked William Rusher, who some people may remember him. He had his own TV show, and he's high up. I think he was the editor of National Review. And I said to him, because I was concerned about regionalism, which actually is communism. I have an article by a communist in the Daily World that admits that regionalism is communism.
Well, and that's an excellent article. That's located at what, dumbingdownamerica.com?
Yeah, it's in deliberatedumbingdown.com, and the name of it, you can look it up by just go to Daily World in the index, and you'll find that article. But the reason that I asked this Bill Rusher this question, the question was this: why are Human Events and National Review and the American Conservative Union, et cetera, why don't they ever deal with regional government? And the answer he gave me was, oh, well, Charlotte, I guess they just don't think it's very important.
My.
Huh? Well, Morris Eidland thought it was pretty important. He wrote the article for the Daily World, in which he talked about how wonderful it was, and we were moving too slowly in the United States towards regionalism, and it worked so well in the Soviet Union. Yeah, huh?
Well,
so anyway, I stick with this belief. My belief is that, yeah, I call it communism light, but it's communism light probably would be called full-fledged socialism. But it's sort of, a lot of it is Hitler. A lot of it is William Foster, who was the chairman of the Communist Party USA. He wrote in his book, Toward a Soviet America, pretty much what he recommended there has been implemented by President George Bush. I'm not saying Clinton wasn't implementing it too, but Bush is in now. And Clinton helped by putting all the police, the extra police on the street. But President Bush has put in the faith-based initiative, which is, according to the Washington Post, communitarianism, which, according to your dictionary, if you look it up, is communism. He's putting in the community service, mandatory community service. The Citizen Corps is absolutely horrible, folks. If you want to find out how up to your their eyeballs they are in this community stuff, go take a look at Citizen Corps. Before you know it, you're going to be required to perform community service. That's part of the legislation coming down the line on the draft. The draft will be split in two.
Republican-sponsored stuff that gets broad support from Democrats, except those who are trying to appear a minority party.
Oh yeah,
but
I mean
their votes are available for this kind of thing when their votes are needed.
Exactly, and I recall Edmund Muskie way back in the early 70s, Governor Muskie, Senator Muskie from Maine. He said that whenever the Democrats couldn't get something, they'd go to the Republicans to get it in. And that was the very time that they couldn't get the regionalism, and so they went to Nixon. And Nixon carved the country up in 10 regions. And, you know, so the listener, all the Americans have just got to the most important thing. I always say this, if I only have 1 minute and I'm about to die and someone says, what do you want to tell the country? It's that the Republicans and the Democrats at the top are identical. And they have been ever since Coolidge, President Coolidge. And when you think Eisenhower was the first president to sign the agreements with the Soviet Union at the peak of the Cold War, in every area, space, ballet, education, science, medicine, everything. And then Norman Dodd was told, he was the research director for the Rees Committee, the investigation of the tax-exempt foundations, and he was told by the president of the Ford Foundation that the foundations got their instructions from the White House. And those instructions were to use their money to change America so it could be comfortably merged with the Soviet Union. Now, don't forget, the Soviet Union is not really dead. I mean, when Gorbachev can refer to the European Union as the new European Soviet...
Charlotte, I always just say all he did was invaded San Francisco because that's where his office is.
Exactly. And what Bush is doing now, you know, putting the same system in, region, here we are, regionalism, well, here in this hemisphere, it's the new American Soviet. People can't say that this is not communism. It is. It's a different form. It's changed a bit. They're smarter. They know better how to do it. The semantic deception is refined. They've got technology. That's very helpful because of data collection.
And they like fascist business over straight socialism.
Oh, yes. And there's no accountability whatsoever when you have public-private partnerships.
No.
None.
It's who's got the inside greasing going on to either the philosophical or economic goals of the person who really holds power, which is typically going to be the governmental agency. I know that there are those who say, no, typically, on the international scheme, it is the business guy with the greatest power and the politician
no,
becomes
you're right.
the pawn. But, you know, locally, it can certainly be the other way around. And it is a global-to-local philosophy that is coming into every county in America with this kind of economic model. And there are places where people are falling for this, even though it means an end of the domain. I'm even finding some suburbanites who are falling for this material that is coming in to regulate their backyards. And
it's shocking that doesn't wake. I mean, I have a friend who always says that, you know, you have to own the problem. Well, if that's not owning the problem,
boy,
I don't know what is. And yet they don't seem to be reacting to this incredible intrusion on their rights under the Constitution. But again, you see, Michael, and it always goes back there. It goes back to education. And if the young people aren't taught the rights, the freedoms that they have been given by the Constitution and the Bill of Rights to protect themselves, to protect their children, their families, their lives, they're never going to know when these things are taken away from them. How can you object to someone taking something away from you if you never knew you had it in the first place? And that's the problem. Americans do not know what form of government they have. They do not understand the protections that are involved there. And so when you know, some slick change agent comes along and sets up these meetings for visioning and all this garbage and uses a semantic deception and scares them to death about the environment and everything and says, oh, we'll just take a little bit of your land near the river, they don't even realize that they're not allowed to do that. That is totally unconstitutional to take someone's private property.
Well,
but, you know, look
the
at the
Supreme Court, though.
Right. I was going to say that. Go ahead.
The politics are falling apart. We have a president who repeatedly, I don't care who's the president, presidents tend to see themselves as kings these days.
Oh, yes.
And we have a Supreme Court that has abandoned the cornerstone of the Fifth Amendment private property protecting clause. When in the Kelo decision last summer, it eliminated the headstone of the Fifth Amendment, and now it has to be protected by states. So we've lost the purpose for the Union through our own Supreme Court's action, and they've made other holdings in the last year that are even worse, one of which was even a unanimous decision. Well, we're going to be taking a break here in a moment. But before we do, let me remind that if you are not receiving the report from Freedom 21 Santa Cruz, go to our website and sign up. We'll be right back here at the radio show. We're back, Freedom 21 Santa Cruz Radio. I'm Michael Shaw with my co-host Roy Avila and our special guest, Charlotte Iserby.
Charlotte, you were talking about how it all goes back to education. Real quick, what is the role of education in creating this new form of government and economic system?
Well, it certainly is it has nothing to do with classical academic education. That's gone. And I think Benjamin Bloom, the Professor Bloom, behavioral psychologist, very, very important, wrote the taxonomy of educational objectives that all teachers have to go through. He died a couple of years ago, but he said in one of his books, the purpose of education is to change the thoughts, actions, and feelings of students. Now, that doesn't have much to do with academics, really. And then he defined good teaching, even worse, and think of this in terms of sustainable development and all, as challenging the students' fixed beliefs. Now, he was an internationalist, deep into the UN, mastery learning, the system, the Pavlovian system of teaching children, which is now across the country with the reading instruction, direct instruction, was basically Bloom's baby. And it started out with mastery learning, and then they changed the name always when people catch on to outcomes-based education, and now it's known as direct instruction. But that's the method to carry out the brainwash. The U.S. Department of Education and U.S. Office of Ed prior to that has always been Marxist. And there's no question about it. I was in there. I saw it. I saw all the grants and contracts going all over the world. As I said earlier, William Foster, head of the Communist Party USA, his book, Toward a Soviet America, he called for exactly what's going in here. It was mental health screening. That was called for by Beria, the head of the KGB, in a speech to American students in the early 30s. Now, that's going in. It's called the Freedom Initiative, to screen all of our children for mental problems. So, the mental problem that children have is that a lot of them believe in the United States and don't believe in globalism and the world government. And that means they're sick. And they've said that. That's not Charlotte talking. He called for the teaching of evolution, which of course is being done. The workforce training, which is going on all over. That's the Soviet system. The Pavlov method for teaching. Community service, mandatory community service, which is what goes on in communist countries, and the faith-based initiative, which they had that in Russia. The Soviet government funded the Russian Orthodox Church, which was infested with KGB agents. And, you know, so there's really nothing that is going on in the public schools of America that is not based on the communist system.
And how long has it been going on?
Well, I would say the last 10 years, because of the implementation of the Soviet polytech system, the school-to-work agenda, where the children will have absolutely no right to choose their own occupations, the decisions are made between the partnerships between the government and the school. How many doctors do you need? How many lawyers? In Russia, it was how many ballet dancers, remember? And, you know, they don't educate unless they need people in the job. I mean, that's a fact. So if you wanted to study something, you know, they didn't need, landscape gardeners or whatever, but you wanted to do that or music or whatever, and they didn't need people in that area, you wouldn't be able to find the education.
Oh, I hate to jump in on you like that when you're on a roll, but we're back at the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio program with Charlotte. Is it be continued, please?
Okay. So anyway, say your daughter or your son wanted to be a mining engineer, and they decided that they didn't need mining engineers. They had enough. He wouldn't be able to find a college to go to study engineering.
Now it's even a high school, because the high schools are being all, you know, there's a medical high school, and there's a...
That's right.
The
charter schools. Exactly. And beware of charter schools. Charter schools are publicly funded private schools. Charter schools must conform to all the federal regulations that the public schools, traditional public schools, have to conform to. Too many people are falling for charter schools. They were set up by the business community, the New American School Development Corporation, a private entity, if you can believe it, setting up a public school system. But anyway, all for workforce training. And the bottom line is using our children as human resources to spin off profits for the global economy and the global economists, the globalists, the elite. In every way, the policing is something that is very, very upsetting to me going on in the schools. The community-oriented policing system, The police are in the schools. They're making the children feel very comfortable with the police. The children are working with the police on projects. In our town here, our two elected officials on our city council have partnered with the police, and these individuals go out with radar guns, and they're picking up speeders. Can you imagine this? They're doing this to help the police department. Now, I don't know why the police department needs help, since Bill Clinton put how many thousand more on the streets. This partnership with the police is disgusting. It should never happen. It is unconstitutional. It's two parts of government merging, and no separation of powers. But the other thing that happened in our community, where the police were handing out medals to citizens who do good deeds. This is a community-oriented policing system. And I wrote a letter, and I haven't heard too much about that program since I wrote the letter. But, you know, I pointed out that we are not animals. We're not dogs, you know, to be given rewards for what we do. This is hopefully we're not. But everything is Pavlov now. Everything is you do what the government wants, no matter whether you're an individual or whether you're a government agency or whether you're a private group. You do what the government in partnership with the corporations want, and you're going to be recognized. Well, you're going to be rewarded. If you don't, like you, Michael, and like me, we're going to be dumped on. And that's a very, very mild way of putting it. But this is a totalitarian society that is being set up. The policing frightens me because the United States has gone into partnership with the Soviets, with the Russian KGB. And they're working closely together, plus the fact that two ex-KGB chiefs were involved in designing the real ID, the passport that we're going to have to use. I mean, I don't know what's going to happen in, what is it, 2008? So if anybody thinks that a totalitarian system is not being implemented right now as we speak, think again.
No,
it
not
is.
Not paying attention to this radio show, that's for sure.
What's that?
They're not paying attention to the guests on this radio show. You've put it about as succinctly as anybody has or anybody could, but you've spent a long time. If anyone has earned, it's because you were there at the very root of this problem in terms of both the timing and the place.
Yes, I was, and I had lived abroad. And so I saw, when I came back, I saw what had happened already in the 70s. I left in the 50s, and I came back in the early 70s. And I saw the changes being made. I even was trained to be a change agent because a retired teacher approved of what I was doing on the school board, and she thought I should become a little more educated. And she paid for me to be trained as a change agent, and I went. And they trained me on how to identify the resistors in my community. And that absolutely blew my mind. I never got off my white horse. The horse is very dirty now. That white horse, I never got off the white horse. When I was trained, basically to identify myself because I was a resistor, this is early 70s, I knew something was terribly wrong. So there's nothing new about this. The Carnegie Corporation, back in 1934, came up with a report, and it called for implementing this through the schools.
You're awesome. And how many people do you think have been through those kinds of trainings?
Well, a lot of teachers and doctors. You know, it's not just for change agents. Change agent training is for businessmen, doctors, lawyers, teachers, police, etc. And the basic thrust of it is to make you into a little robot, a collectivist, a groupie. No thinking on your own. A lot of sensitivity training goes on in there. I didn't go through that. However, I did go and I was trained on how to put all the horrible programs into the public schools that the smart parents didn't want, and how to get around the community, and how to identify the resistors. Also, how to identify the important people in the community.
Thank you so much for everything you do.
Well, thank you, and I wish you well on the rest of this evening. I think my time is up.
Thank you very much. Stay on the line if you want. We're bringing Steve Yates on, and we're going to shift from education to continental issues, but they all tie together.
They sure do. I'm going to listen for a while, and then I have to go to bed.
All right. Well, thank you so much for tonight, and for decades of seeing the issue and bringing it further and further to the forefront. I mean,
well, thank you for being there.
We're not over the hump, but
nope.
I heard Michael Chapman, another person from Maine, on the show right before us, and I've never heard Michael so high and flying, because he expressed himself so beautifully on sustainable development issues.
Oh, he's fantastic. Michael Kaufman, you mean?
Yes.
And you should get him on.
Right down to where the world is today and real live events. And
it's incredibly
good.
It's
a great call for the American people to, you know, snap out of it. This isn't time for parties and fun all the time anymore. There are serious issues that are right in front of our nose, and it's time we pay attention or it becomes too late, maybe sooner than even those of us who've been watching this circumstance had imagined up till this point in time.
That's right.
Well, Stephen Yates, good evening, sir.
Hello, and I thank you for having me on your show again.
Well, it's
pleasure.
It's a pleasure. You know, for those who've just turned in, we've got four guests tonight, four prior guests of the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio show, as we work down the last 4 hours of our series here on Radio Liberty of the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio show. And I'm awfully glad you're... you're with us tonight, Steve. For the audience's benefit, Steve and I and Henry Lamb did a three-way talk down in Auburn, Alabama, here a whole month or two ago before the Mises Institute. And, you know, the word needs to spread out to these libertarian-styled think tanks. Sometimes I think they're a little awash with this idea of anarcho-capitalism, and they become actual pawns to the creation of this global dynamic called the New World Order.
Yeah, there is that danger.
Okay. Well, you're here tonight to discuss the American Union?
Well, the phrase that a handful of us have begun using is the North American Union. Now, I began using that phrase in a couple of articles, one of which is on newswithviews.com. The other one is in The New American. Then I turned to Human Events Online and discovered that Jerome R. Corsi, whom some of your listeners might remember from his scathing evaluation of John Kerry, Unfit to Command or Unfit to Lead, I forget the exact title of his book, but his name might be familiar from that, is written a series of articles for Human Events Online, and is also using this phrase. Now, whether it'll actually be called that or not is anybody's guess. It might be called the United States of the Americas, although somehow I don't see the Quebecies up in Canada kowtowing to that. There's a lot of hurdles to be cleared. It's not going to happen today. It's not going to happen tomorrow. But they are building a set of, how should you say it, networks of public-private partnerships, bureaucracies, or another term I started using is globocracies, to try to build this North American community, another term for it, just a little at a time. They want the basic structure in place by 2010. Whether it'll happen by 2010, again, that's anybody's guess, but as the Fabian socialists would say, they're making haste slowly.
Well, it does seem to me that the dynamic of the borders in North America have been very methodically blurred. Both the teaching premise, the border for a business and legal protections, the certainly the status of people as citizens of one nation or another, all of it's begun to blur, and that certainly makes me perk my ears when I hear of a globalist plan to create the North American Union. I mean, like the European Union, we're going to get rid of the dollar. I mean, I hear sophisticated notions that that the dollar's on its last run or series of run to through inflation and into oblivion.
Well, I have been hearing a couple of references to what has been called the Amero as a form of currency that would be common to the United States, Canada, and Mexico, the equivalent of the euro. And of course, European nations have given up their own national currency, which is a huge hurdle towards giving up national sovereignty and eventually their national identity. And the borders between what were different European nations have become increasingly, have become easier to cross and become really no more than lines on maps. It'd be like the border between California and Nevada, for example, or between North and South Carolina.
So it'd be
you have a welcome station, and that's about it.
So in order to erase these borders and create what you're describing, you'd have to have some kind of unification of the three sets of laws. There'd have to be basically a unitary source, ultimately, for North American law, much as Brussels serves as the central lawmaking agency for all of Europe. Is that true?
That's essentially correct. So the phrase I have been hearing is deep integration.
Deep integration.
Well, Stephen, today I was listening to Dr. Stan's program, and he had the gentleman that you spoke of earlier on the program. And he was talking about the North American Security and Prosperity document that was signed in Waco with the president and Senor Fox and the gentleman from Canada. And I was like, yeah, all right. So I went home. I just typed it from an internet search, and I was amazed at all of the things that came up from that. And then I said, well, you know what, let me type in Amero, and the same kind of thing, just a whole, but so people don't really think that there's a plan out there to implement all these things. Just type the stuff in on the internet,
yeah,
and it'll come up. No.
Oh.
It's amazing. I was floored.
You know,
now, I would add
the people who are working in this, if it was totally clandestine, there's only so many people who will do that. It's just that no one's paying attention. You know, you have to dig a little bit. Our news media is part of the New World Order, so they're not going to give us a straight scoop. I mean, the Dow Jones and Santa Cruz Sentinel isn't going to give its readers the kind of information you find here.
Go ahead, Stephen. You were going to say something?
Yeah, I was going to add to that the information, I believe you were referring to the Security and Prosperity Partnership of North America.
There you go.
That was put together March 23rd, 2005 at Waco. And it has its own website, and it's an official government website. I've started to add that these are not conspiracy theory websites like Rents.com, for example, or something like that. This is an official government website. Anybody who wants to, all they need to do is go to www.spp.gov, and the official site, everything that they're doing just comes right up, and it's amazing. It's nothing less than phenomenal.
Well, Corsi was saying today that he had gone to Washington to visit with congressmen, to tell them about this, and virtually all of the congresspeople that he talked to knew nothing about it.
Well, that's not always the case. There certainly are congressmen, and there's a number of them who do. I mean, our congressman has sustainable development and the three E's of sustainable development plastered all over his website. He sends out letters. He just, when queried about sustainable development, says, I've never heard of it. But it's all around our congressman. Now, he's part of the Democratic minority, progressive, little side group. So, you know, he is considered of the liberal variety, but it's amazing all the sustainable dollars he brings home to Santa Cruz from a Republican Congress. It's just phenomenal.
Well, both of our senators are Republicans. I'm not clear whether they know about this thing or not. It might be useful to to bang out a couple of letters and try and find out.
Well,
but this is not the only. This is not the only document out there. Earlier, I made an indirect reference to a book-length manuscript. Yes, a short book, Building a North American Community, which is on the website of the Council on Foreign Relations, which, of course, has been one of the big players in building a more globally integrated world.
Well, undoing the vision of America. You know, I mean, they might leave America in a named form as some region on planet Earth governed by a global dynamic. But the purpose of globalism is to exterminate the vision of America. And what we're doing is abandoning the vision while the change agents that Charlotte talked about come into our communities, get into our schools. And if you've only got 1 year out of 12 where the effective change agent had a hold of your child, well, full year as a child, your child never recover in all likelihood.
Well, that's certainly true. Children are very impressionable, and they are placed under these change agents. That's a good term, by the way. I keep encountering it in my own research, and they have nothing to compare it with, possibly except what they get at home. But the way our economy works now, both parents have to work to make ends meet. So this ties in with the kind of economy that's been built in this country since NAFTA was implemented, which requires both parents to work. A part of this whole campaign is to gradually undermine and eventually destroy America's financially independent middle class. Financial independence scares these globalists. They don't want people to be independent. They want us all in debt and dependent on them.
I know. At a resource conservation district seance with the City of Santa Cruz schools, someone from the schools came out and talked about the school's mission to make sure that every child knew they were growing up in an interdependent world. And, you know, I didn't refrain from commenting to that person, and she's somewhat backed away from the phrase, but this is what children in all California schools, I mean, it's not just Santa Cruz, and I think all schools across the country, and if Charlotte's still here, she might confirm or accept that. I suspect confirm. Are exposed to just that kind of mentality, that we're in an interdependent world, and that therefore you're to give yourself up to the collective. You will be assigned your work. The political boundaries even of the United States are dissipated under the terms and directions of our own leaders negotiating in the late 20th century and early 21st century without the American people taking heed. It's not as though they're fully hiding this. It's all over the web.
Oh, it's all over everywhere.
Talk about what is the North American Union.
What is the North American Union?
Yes.
I would describe it as this vision of an essentially unified continent, a sort of regional superstate, and also a stepping stone towards what the globalists really want, which is a totally integrated, borderless, seamless world government, ruled by themselves, of course, with no middle class in it, because the middle class will have been destroyed by that time. But it essentially, I used the term earlier, deep integration, first economic and then political. That's educational, of course, in there too, of what was the United States, Canada, and Mexico. And then, of course, we're also hearing about NAFTA Plus, and there's not really a specific document to hang on that, at least not yet.
And what do you anticipate that document will be all about?
I would anticipate that document to probably be the application of this notion to areas like trade and transportation specifically.
And where would that document come from?
It could come from the CFR. It could, there's more than one place it could come from. We're just speculating here. It could,
so it's one of these,
it could turn up on the SPP website, or it could, or it could turn up on its own website.
What is SPP?
SPP, Security and Prosperity Partnership of North America.
And how is the current immigration crisis tied in with all this?
The current immigration crisis, I think after the Iraq War, that's probably one of the hottest issues in the country right now. But I have argued in a couple of places that the policy our government has taken towards immigration right now, illegal or otherwise, makes absolutely no sense unless you look at it in terms of this broader context. I mean, George W. Bush gives a speech before a national audience. I have it, I'm thinking of the speech that he gave May 15th. I have it right here. It's, if you read it carefully, it doesn't say anything. It's pretty much devoid of content. So he's going to send a few thousand National Guard troops to protect the borders. He's going to build a fence of, I forget how many hundred miles of, 400, 500, something like that, to protect a border that's well over 1,000 miles long. Now, he may, of course, be just exploiting the geographical illiteracy in the country today. I mean, I looked at a study, came out about 6 weeks ago, how one American in three between the ages of 18 and 24 cannot walk up to a map of the United States and find Louisiana. And this is after three-quarters of a year of wall-to-wall coverage of Hurricane Katrina, which devastated New Orleans. And one out of two cannot find Mississippi. So that gives you some idea of the level of geographical illiteracy. The younger the generations go, the worse the illiteracy is. This probably ties back in with a lot of things that Charlotte was saying.
Yep, the dumbing down.
I had her book right here, The Deliberate Dumbing Down of America, one of the best books on the subject I've ever read. I think she makes the case clearly that this is deliberate.
Well, I'm quite, as you say that, I reflect and I think, wow, what if the American spirit grabbed hold of that idea? I tell you, there's going to be some consequence of coming off of this corrupt system that we've found ourselves dependent upon and now controlled by. But boy, that would be a joyous notion of getting on track to where our own lives and the lives of our children become ours and theirs, and not this growing bureaucracy that wants to tell you about your property, your action, and your thought process.
You mean a revival of the idea of private property rights?
Well, a revival of the ideals of American, of American, the American essence.
Well, a number of us are attempting to do that. I have been toying with the outline of what would be a new book project if I can get the real matrix finished. It's called something along the lines of The American Way, which works out the premises of just that: freedom for the individual as opposed to collectivism, private property rights, the idea that the United States of America is a constitutional republic of limited government rather than a democracy, which is one of the worst mistakes that we've ever made, was to buy into this idea that the United States was ever intended to be a democracy.
Well, that's a very Bushonian statement, you know. When I hear that, I know you're supposed to think of Wilson, but I think of Bush 1 and Bush 2. I mean, this is a democracy is all I ever hear from those Bush...
Oh, yeah, well, building democracy around the world.
Yeah,
that's just wrong.
It's wrong. It means building tyranny, building a global tyranny. You know, here in Santa Cruz, we voted down the Sustainable Development Smart Growth Bonding heavily. It needed 67%. It only drew 42%. Every other county in Central California adopted, 8 or 9 other counties adopted their smart growth transportation funding. We didn't. But here come the politicians. They're now convening a sustainable
and run going around,
and they've got funding from state and federal government to do all of their nasty programs of bicycles and
I bet there's a little foundation money in there.
Well, there's probably some of that, but it's an end run sustainable development around the corner.
Take a quick break.
Be right back. Welcome back to the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz Radio Show as we complete this segment with our special guest, Dr. Stephen Yates of South Carolina. In the next hour, we're going to proceed. We're going to talk with the Freedom 21 favorite Britisher. Robert Theobald will be in our first half hour of the next hour, top of the hour. And after him, from Idaho, former Northern Californian, Mr. Patrick Wood of the August Review. So we're going to keep this kind of dialogue short and sweet, to the point, get the big picture of what's going on in education, what's going on with globalism here on the North American continent. Then we'll go over and take a look at Europe with Theobald, and then back here to the United States to take a look at the big picture of how the globalist sustainable development movement is swarming not just our town here in Santa Cruz, but your town too. Well, welcome back, Steve.
Well, I want to jump in here. Steve was talking about that new book that he might come out with, and you know, the American Way. And I learned this from you guys because you know I'm hanging around you more and more. That the rights we have are inalienable rights, not rights granted by the government.
Well, that's
exactly
the big difference between America and every other political idea that's ever existed. Here, our rights are part of us. The government doesn't give it to us. You know, I was down, I heard the planning director today at Santa Cruz County talk about how his job is to balance your private property right with my view of the big public interest. Well, there is no such balancing of such an idea, and that's not what private property is. And that precisely is what's happening in every community across the country, in terms of stripping apart that outward expression of what being a human being is. You know, it's your property. You created it or you traded for it. It's your property. It's respected. It's why the Ten Commandments are being thrown out of the courthouses, because it says, thou shalt not steal. Well, that includes, you know, the mass using government as a bulk to get this or that. But at the end of the day, once the government starts stealing, there's nobody but the guy who's right in the middle of that power center who really benefits. And of course, he benefits just by becoming more and more rotten as the time proceeds. Sorry about that, Steve.
Not a problem. Well, you can have private property rights, you can have sustainable development. You can't have both at once. They're incompatible systems. Period.
And maybe that's why in so many communities, and even here in Santa Cruz, most people probably aren't aware of the reality that sustainable development is. We'll be right back here at the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz Radio Show to wrap up our first hour.
We're back on the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz Radio program. The time goes so fast with these great guests that we've had over time. You know, even though they've been here a few times, it still goes so fast because they're just too good. We're with Dr. Stephen Yates. I rarely talk when he talks because I'm trying to take notes, keeping up with all the stuff that he has to say.
Well, if listeners out there want to hear more of Charlotte or Stephen or our guests in the next hour, go to our radio archives at f21sc.net. And on the front page, you'll find the radio, and from there you get to the archives. And
go there anytime. Tell your friends.
Yeah. Well, Steve, we've got a couple minutes here left. Give us some summary of the North American dynamic and what Americans need to come to understand if we want to protect the American life.
Well, we're in a position where dangerously close to just having to start over again. I mean, articulating American basics, freedom for the individual, not collectivism, the idea that America is a sovereign republic under limited government under the Constitution, which could not be overthrown by a vote or by popular demand, which separates it from a democracy. I like to define a democracy this way. It's two wolves and a sheep taking a vote on what to have for dinner.
And each one
of us... Think about it. That's democracy.
Each one of us standing on our own, you know, with our wife or our husband and our children. Each one of us is nothing but a sheep, if that's the way the government wants to view it. That's why it's so important to have a system of government that keeps that from happening.
If you have an educational system that is designed to produce a mindless sheeple, if you will, well, that's one of the reasons we're in this predicament that we're in, where you can have abundant evidence of what's going on. I mean, it's all over the World Wide Web, and it's on their own websites, and nobody knows about it. It's not news. Much of the American public is too busy watching Survivor and American Idol and following the baseball season. So for them, this isn't real. Well, it's real.
Well, they read the L.A. Times and the New York Times, and
they aren't going to find it there either.
Yeah, they're getting a real slant. So,
well, unless it hits you directly, like it did someone like Suzette Kilo up in New Haven, Connecticut, and they're still struggling to keep the property. And some of those people, as they've been living on that land their entire lives, so naturally they're a little bit upset that Supreme Court decision, and we're coming up on 1 year anniversary as one of the worst Supreme Court decisions in U.S. history, Kilo versus New Haven.
Well, I would say that if the American people don't summon their own strength and realize what the American experience is and what duty that imposes upon each of us, if
it
we don't
does
come
impose certain duties to be informed, to be vigilant.
And if we forget what we need to do now, the benefits that we still seemingly enjoy in this country will dissipate completely, and it will not be easy to go back. So that's why understanding these dynamics is so critical. That's why if you're not getting the report, I suggest again you sign up. Check out newswithviews.com. Steve writes there, I write there. Charlotte writes there. That's right. Patrick Wood, who will be up in the next hour, writes there. I'm not saying I am in line with every writer at News with Views, but I don't know where you can get a better collection of people who understand and write about the dynamic of what is advancing toward us, whether it's under Republican directorship or Democrat directorship. I like to call them two sides of one coin. And what it's producing for us is an education system, as we talked about in the first half hour, and here for the last half hour, a quick discussion of the North American Union and the dynamics behind that. And, the story just gets deeper and deeper. So if you want to know more, check into Freedom 21 Santa Cruz website, and we'll send you beyond that to other points.
And we're not making it up, folks. We're not making it up.
Well, thank you very much, Steve. I'll look forward to the next time we can talk. And for now, we're coming up to the...
The views expressed on tonight's Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio show are the opinions of neither this station nor its sponsors. In fact, they're not necessarily the opinions of Radio Liberty or of Freedom 21 Santa Cruz. The views expressed by the host are those of the host. Also, the opinions expressed by callers and guests are theirs. Whether you agree or disagree, please join in. To participate, you can call during caller segments at 888-24-LIBERTY. That's 888-245-4237. Or you can go to our online audience participation center at www.freedom21santacruz.net/radio. That's freedom21santacruz.net/radio. Now let's start advancing freedom.
Welcome back for the second hour of tonight's Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio show. I'm Michael Shaw with my co-host Roy Avila. And this hour, after an exciting first hour with Charlotte on education and Steve on the North American Union, we're going to move across the globe and talk to one of my favorite guests, Robert Theobald of Great Britain. Good evening, Robert.
Hello, Michael.
Well, it's,
can you hear me clearly?
Well, I can hear you. I know you're across the ocean, and it's still dark, and it's only 5 a.m.
Oh, no, it gets light at 4 o'clock in midsummer.
Wow. You're further north than California.
Yeah, I'm
further
north than you.
Gee, okay. Well, good morning to you.
Really?
Well, you know, one of the nice things about the communication that our radio show has had with you and people that we have met through you is to really understand the connection between what we talked about in the last half hour, the dawning North American Union, and how we need to understand what the European Union is all about to see what the globalists have in store for us here in America. And you've been so helpful to me, and I think to our audience, in understanding and being able to get some foreshadowing of the pattern the globalists use. And we're able to do that by watching Europe, and more specifically England, and very thankfully to your efforts, that picture becomes a lot more clear.
Okay, I've got quite a few things to talk to you about this morning, or this evening for you. I've got a paper in front of me which is actually called the Committee of the Regions United Kingdom Delegation. Delegation Strategy 2006. That's a document from Brussels, from the Committee of the Regions, and it's quite interesting because it actually sets out the whole programme that we've got in suggested priority, medium, high, or low, and suggests type of action. This is where the European Union wants to write down its effect through the regions, which are the regions which are all over Europe. The whole of the EU is divided into regions. And sustainable development, which is I thought it would be interesting to talk about straight away.
Sure, but just for the audience, regionalism and sustainable development are just pieces of describing the same thing. As Charlotte Isabeat said in our first segment tonight, regionalism is defined by communists as communism.
That's right. And sustainable development, I'll read it straight out because it's a very short thing. They're going for global renewable energy, they're going for a fund of funds. And I don't know what that is actually, I expect you do. It says under here, an innovative public-private financing mechanism. Now, I give that a high priority, and suggested action would be non-legislative action, and it's commission communication. That's a sustainable development entry in this document. So I thought you'd find that interesting.
Well, I do. We're going to take a break here for a little bit before we come back with our guest, Robert Theobald from Great Britain. We'll be right back at Freedom 21 Santa Cruz Radio. We're back at the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio show with our guest Robert Theobald. And Robert, some of our stations are away for a break, but let's just keep developing these issues that you're discussing, and we'll bring them up to speed when they return.
Just to explain to me, Michael, this idea of a fund of funds. I'm interested to know more about that.
A fund of funds?
Yep, that's what I think.
And this is in the context of public-private partnership?
I don't know, it's a global renewable energy fund of funds. It's something obviously worth investigating. I haven't seen that before, so I thought it would be important to actually mention it.
I mean, I would think perhaps in the stock market term it may be a fund that is invested in other funds, but I don't know the term.
No, I don't. But that's something to think about and understand in due course. But there's so much happening in all this now. One of the interesting things in this document that I noticed is that the sustainable development section, that's not even associated with the environment section. In fact, the environment section, they give that low or medium priority. Yeah.
Well, it's all a matter of how they've deemed the marketing will sell the product. That doesn't matter what they call it. They've got their program for all of us, and they're just putting it in place.
On high priority, which is obviously, I'm having a look at what else is high priority, and it is strategic guidelines on cohesion, regional policy. In other words, they want
one country to have laws to look like another country.
That's it, yeah. That actually is another interesting thing about regionalization. Now, we've got something coming up now, and it's called cross-border regions.
That's something that is occurring down along the Southern California-Mexican border. There's a Zone 21, which is 21 miles long, that takes in both countries, and it's sort of an R&D section under international and domestic law, as I best understand it.
So the way we've got over here, if you take for example the whole of the south coast of England and the east coast of England is linked up county by county with areas in France and in Holland. And Father East as well.
Hold that thought for a moment. We'll be right back at Freedom 21 Santa Cruz. We're back with our special guest, Robert Theobald. And Robert, just continue describing the regionalizing process happening in Great Britain and Europe generally.
That's right. I'll give you an example of how this cross-border region works. Take Kent, for example. Kent is a part of England where Dover is, which is very close to France. They've got one university. They've got the University of Kent. And then over the other side in the Padicalo, what they call the Moor Padicalo district, which is Calo, obviously, and it's Lille as well, and Lille around there. They've got apparently three universities there. Now, all those three, plus our one, our English one, have to go together and have policies together and presumably, ask for money, ask for grants of public money together. That's one of the ways they do it.
What do you see as the British citizens' response? You're ahead of the process from where the United States is. Are people beginning to recognize it for what it is?
Well, they are beginning to. Now, you do read about it in the paper a little bit, and some people are starting to understand. It's quite interesting because a lot of you that I know that's done a lot of work against regionalism, which is Mrs. Sloop, Jenny Sloop. She's having a little protest outside the South East of England Regional Assembly. That's on the 12th of July. And when you do that, you have to apply to the police and say that you're going to be there and tell them. So she, she was on to the police to inform them and give them notice. And she said she spoke for about half an hour to the police officer, and he was most interested in what we were doing. And he said, "I hope you make it a good, colourful demonstration." Well, yeah, the police, I don't know if you've heard about this, but they're regionalizing the police now over here.
Wow, so it's not city or county, it's, some new line that's amorphous can always change, and there's no direct accountability. And it's how you destroy the Republican form of government. America, of course, is a democratic republic. And would you consider England a republic?
Oh, no, of course, it's a monarchy, but you see, we've got this, the police, for example, they've really been in for nearly, I don't know, 150 years, more than that, they've been organised on a county basis, and there's a county, used to call it the Watch Committee, and if you had an issue, you could go along there, and raise your issue in the meeting. But you see, with this regeneration, the police control of the police will be farther and farther away from the people, which goes for everything else to do with regionalization.
Well, regionalization is a process that certainly is happening across the United States. Here in California, Governor Schwarzenegger, right when he took office, issued the 2,500-page California Performance Review, which was an outline of California when county government has been eliminated and regional government, including 10 regional school systems to support the entire state, would be formed. So this concept of regionalism is well pushed along in Europe and in England, Great Britain. Here in the United States, it is moving along quickly as we come to the point not that far behind where Europe is right now in the context of creating a continental machine of the new global governance world order. And here in America, people don't see or don't understand the effects of regionalism. Of course, even Ronald Reagan was a regionalist, and he was always viewed by his supporters as one who was committed to the American way. But when you boil down his activities on behalf of political institutions, you find something of a different story with his focus on regionalizing California back in the 1970s. Carry on and give us
one interesting thing about regionalization. Just a quick comment about that, about the history of regionalization, the history of regionalism. I've got a copy of a page of a book that was printed in 1928. History of, I think it's called the Encyclopedia of Socialism or something. I can't remember the pages, but there was a professor there, he was a Fabian socialist professor. And they were talking about, the Fabian socialists, they were talking about regionalism in the 20s, 1920s. And one of the interesting phrases was, and regionalism suits our purposes. And once you know what their purposes are, you see how that's the case. It goes back a long, long, long way. And Sir Arthur Soter, he was a Fabian civil servant back in the 20s, and he was consorting with Jean Monnet, who was they call him the father of the European Union, and they knew exactly what they were going to do right back in the 1920s. And not many people probably know that the full title of the European Union is the European Union of the Regions and Cities. That's its proper title.
Well, the European Union is a globalist governmental organization, and the goal of globalism, and we see it here in Santa Cruz, anyone who wants to take a look, and it's been here for decades, is a global to local movement. So it's global governance style applied on a local regional basis. You might keep counties, or you might not. Their preference would be to do away with counties, do away with states, do away with national boundaries, and put everything on a loosey-goosey, regionalized concept of public-private partnerships moving in and using or not using assets in rural areas and adjusting their boundaries according to the end results of a totalitarian government, one that's controlling the business as, quote, partners, and controlling the citizens who have become dumbed down and not educated to the ideals of the American vision, but instead educated to the ideals of this global governance dynamic. Do you see, you made some reference earlier about the British people and their reaction to this step-by-step process that's not as advanced in England as it is in France, but it's more advanced than it is here in the United States, although they're all the same thing, focused to the same end.
Well, it's interesting what we've got here right now, Michael. We've got it's the Football World Cup now, and if you drive out today, like any journey whatsoever, you will see hundreds and hundreds and thousands of St. Jewish fans. I'll just explain to the American people about that. American people really think of the flag of the United Kingdom as a Union flag. That's what everybody knows. And that's the Union of England, Ireland and Scotland. Now, the St. George flag is just a plain red cross on the white ground, and that is the flag of England. And it was hardly known until about five years ago. But now, absolutely everywhere, and one of the reasons for that is because of regionalisation, they've deliberately attempted to carve off Scotland from the United Kingdom. Actually, it's still part of the United Kingdom, but it's got its own regional government, which is just a Brussels proxy, actually. English people have got so fed up with being told that their nationalism is worthless, and that they haven't even, the whole thing has been downplayed by the authorities, and now you see this amazing reaction. Now, it's not strictly speaking to do with politics. Obviously, it comes through football, but people have got this terrific reaction. And they're asserting their nationality. And the programme on the BBC last night, it's called The No Knows, and I'm sure that anyone wants to go onto their website will be able to listen to it, and it's interesting because you've got these various people, the great and the good, that were discussing on it, and one of the words I heard was NAF. Now, I don't know if you have that word in American, NAF, N-O-F-F. Now, one of the speakers was referring to the St. George flag and this whole thing of NAF. And I just read you out what NAF means in the Oxford Dictionary. Unfashionable, socially awkward, rubbishy. Now, I would urge you to go into the BBC website and look up the Mail News, which was for yesterday, and listen to that. One of the people on there, by the way, is Georges Monbiot. He talks on environmental matters, and my wife was so furious with hearing him on there, completely discounting the idea of the nation, of any kind of idea of the nation.
And that's being broadcast.
Do check that one out. It's very interesting. While we're on the matter of the BBC, I know lots of Americans listen to the BBC, and they do have some good programs. But you must bear in mind that the BBC gets money, it gets money from the European Investment Bank, which has a political agenda. And as I heard Dr. Stanley too say the other day, he who plays the piper calls the tune.
Mm-hmm.
So always be aware of that when you listen to the BBC.
Well, I think you could make that same statement about most American media, whether it's the newspapers or some of the national radio programs. And The consolidation of media outlets has become real broad. We'll be right back here at the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz Radio Show. We're back through this commercial break with our special guest, Robert Theobald of Great Britain. And we're talking about all things European, from the European Union. And even though from where I sit, you know, it's the British guys, along with their American counterparts, who are creating this globalist new world government under the guise of sustainable development.
Well, you hear this phrase so often. Will Britain join the European Union? Well, Britain is in the European Union. It's been in it since 1972, I think it was. Now, what we don't have, we do not have their currency. We have a derogation. See, we have the pound sterling. Sweden has the Swedish krona. Denmark has the Danish krona. We've all got a derogation, you see, and we don't want to use it. We don't have to use it at the moment, but that's only the position because of the largesse of Brussels. We've got this derogation, you see, from the requirement to use the euro currency, but Brussels wants everybody to use it. So if we ever had to adopt that currency, that would be the thing that woke everybody up, you see. Most people they doesn't really figure much on their daily agenda, but in actual fact it does, because take for example common agricultural policy in the European Union, and every family of four pays about £20, that's about, I don't know what that is, about $30 a week extra on its grocery bill, because we're members of the common agricultural policy. So it does affect everybody all the time. To get back onto the sustainable thing now, Roger, I must just mention this before I run out of time. There's a sustainable communities bill, which they hope to put before the British Parliament. Now that's got a local angle and it's got a regional angle. I was looking on the... I've been checking it up, and it seems to me that the way it works is this. If you have... Say, for example, you're a village or a small town.
Hello? Did we cut off...
Well, we seem to have lost our overseas connection.
Well, we'll work to get it back.
He was just about to talk about this sustainable communities bill, and you know, we hear about those kinds of things all the time here, because you know, whether it's strong neighborhoods or you know, they're all, I think, the same kind of things. What happens when those kinds of programs are implemented?
Well, when they're implemented, the implementation of them itself is the derogation of the principle of private property. And once the principle has been abandoned, as George Washington said, freedom and private property are inseparable. So what the sustainable globalists know is that if they can begin to couch the term of private property as something subject to balance imposed by regulators with a public-private partnership motivation in mind, well, they're just able then to take complete control. We have a caller on the line.
Oh, Patrick Wood's joining us early.
Patrick Wood is joining us early. We have lost our connection in Great Britain, so if we don't hear back from Robert, or if we can't make contact with him, we'll proceed with our next guest. And if we get a call from Robert, we'll have double the fun.
Double the fun. Yes. Oh, and for you viewers, get your pencils out. I always love to hear from Patrick, because Patrick just gets down to the nitty-gritty of the verbiage. It's like a class when he comes to talk to us. So better than any class that you would get in any educational system. I don't talk when he's here because I'm taking notes because it's a real education when he's here.
Well, Patrick, how are you tonight?
Well, I'm fine, thank you. I'm blushing.
Well,
I appreciate your comments. I have to say that if there's any credit that I should not take, it's that my genesis in researching this stuff and getting passion for it, you realize, came originally from my former colleague, Anthony C. Sutton, who is now deceased, but was one of the greatest writers on globalism probably that the century has ever seen, last century in any case.
Well, we thank him.
And he started this. He started this whole thing, basically. He was onto it probably one of the very first back in the 60s and late 60s and 70s, and we met up in the mid-70s and got together and started writing his stuff, and his rub off on me was profound.
Well,
so here I am.
Thank you. That I'm reading now, The War on Gold, and...
Yes. It's just, you know what? That book is just as timely today as it ever was.
Yeah. Well, there's no doubt about that. It's probably more timely, only because we're 30 years later in the process, and this process needs to be handled before it completes.
Yes. Well, you had a lot of interesting things discussed on your program tonight, and I've been taking notes like mad, and putting my thoughts together for what we might address here.
Well, fire ahead.
Well, the few things that I want to say, I don't want to beat over what anybody else said, beat it around again, because what's said is fine. It just let it stand by and large. But I want to stress to people that, Humpty Dumpty didn't just fall off the wall. There's almost a sense in this country that, we just had a string of bad luck, and well, as some people maybe taking advantage of it, it's just like some the force out there somewhere. Nobody defined the force, but the force is out there, and there's the good side and the bad side, and there's this colossal battle going on. Humpty Dumpty didn't just fall off the wall by accident. Humpty Dumpty was pushed, and all the king's men and all the horses and all the king's men are not going to be able to put Humpty back together again at this point. And what people need to realize is they need to be able to put accountability here to who the heck has stuck to us. And the people, I just want to go back and stress this again, the people individually, the people who have stuck to us, the greatest accumulation of them can be seen in a membership of the organization, the Trilateral Commission, that was started in 1973. By David Rockefeller and Zbigniew Brzezinski.
Well, those are two very powerful names.
They were, and they assembled a powerful group of people from around the world. Back then, 300 people from 100 from the U.S., 100 from Europe, and 100 from Asia, mostly from Japan. And they put together a cabal, if you will, of brain, a brain trust to create this new international economic order, as they called it then, and we see it today. It's exactly what they said they were going to do. They weren't secret about it necessarily. We discovered it back then. They've stated their plans, they've executed their plans, and we're harvesting the results of their plans today. And it's not by accident. These people are very few number of people, by the way, compared to how many billions in the world. These few numbers of people captured because they realized they needed to have power in order to accomplish their monopoly economics, if you will. They captured the U.S. executive branch in 1976 with the election of James Earl Carter. And they have had a hammerlock on the executive branch ever since, increasing powers to the executive branch every administration. Every administration since has been riddled with members from the Trilateral Commission, including George H.W. Bush, including William Jefferson Clinton, including not George W. Bush, but including Dick Cheney and his wife.
Hold that thought, and we'll take a break.
I'll
be right back. We're back on the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio program with our special guest, Patrick Wood. He's joining us a little early because we lost our connection to our previous guest, Robert Theobald, but we're happy to have him. So continue, please.
Well, this group of people has had a hammerlock on the executive branch, and this is how they have been able to sneak through, if you will, and do the things to America that we're all talking about today, whatever it might be. You talked about the SPP program, for instance, Security and Prosperity Partnership that's going on within the Department of Commerce right now. These things are not mandated by the public any way, shape, or form. They're not mandated by the Congress. The executive branch is just doing these things outside of any kind of congressional approval or oversight. They're doing what the heck they want to do. And the reason they can do it is they have accumulated enough power to themselves where they can make an end run around our legislative bodies. And we see this time and time again since Carter was in office, and we see it especially in the Bush administration. This, by the way, is not a left-right, you know, left-wing, right-wing kind of conflict here. This is an issue of Americans need to stand up on Americans. This is not a Democrat-Republican conflict going on. They have control of both parties. And they have been working both parties, the people of it, against each other so that they don't see what's going on. But these people have got the executive branch in their pocket. They're using it to their maximum advantage to create this new international economic order, whether it would be regionalism to convert America into a trilateral type of a relationship with Canada and Mexico, or whether it would be to turn us into, you know, the greater part of the globalist movement, you know, around the world. In these past few years, just consider what's happened to us and these people, by the way, have been at the core of each one of these things I'll mention. And by the way, on my website, augustreview.com, these issues are brought out and documented, but I'll just summarize it right here. They have destroyed our national security. Our borders and our maritime security right now is absolutely zipola. They've destroyed our Constitution because the executive branch is now ruling our country. They've destroyed our economy. We have been plundered. Once they figured out how to get their giant proboscis into our treasury, they have just managed to suck everything out of America that they could. They've destroyed our infrastructure in the process. No less than $3 trillion of prime U.S. businesses have been sold to overseas interests in the last 10 years. We have been gutted of the important industries that used to make America great. They're gone now. We don't own them anymore.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. We're back to Freedom 21 Santa Cruz Radio Show with our special guest, Patrick Wood of the August Review. Patrick has given, over the last few minutes, a thorough and roaring indictment of the leadership, the recent leadership of the United States. And to make your point on David Rockefeller's role, let me read a quote from him midway through this process, 1991 in Baden-Baden, Germany. He said, "We're grateful to the Washington Post, the New York Times, and Time Magazine, and other great publications whose directors have attended our meetings and respected their promises of discretion for almost 40 years. It would have been impossible for us to develop our plan for the world if we had been subjected to the lights of publicity during those years. But the world is now more sophisticated and prepared to march towards a world government. The supernatural sovereignty of an intellectual elite and world bankers is surely preferable to the national auto-determination practiced in past centuries."
Yep. He said it, and here we are.
You know, it's amazing. You don't find this stuff in the L.A. Times or the Santa Cruz Sentinel.
Well, no, you won't. In fact, you don't hardly find it anywhere unless you just kind of go and dig around for it. But it's not secret. It's not secret. It's not like it's some kind of a, you know, totally concealed conspiracy, because it's not. These people have written over, well, even Hitler wrote Mein Kampf and said exactly what he's going to do. But these people are too much of egomaniacs to not let themselves be known before they take action, and they have been doing that ever since 1973 when the Trilateral Commission was formed. And we see, what we see today is a product of that whole thing. The only other point I wanted to say on the destroyed thing, they also destroyed our political system. Both parties are broken beyond repair right now.
Well, both parties, I recently wrote, and I think something similar was published at News with Views, an article I entitled Two Sides of One Coin.
Yes.
And between the Democrat Leadership Council, a Fabian-inspired Tony Blair-type organization,
yes.
And the Republican organization called the International International Democrat Union. The GOP and the Conservative Party of Britain lead that organization. They both hold to the same principles, and neither of those principles are the vision that Americans have always had for this nation. So it's little wonder that guys like Rockefeller can buy their way into a position where control over the media exists, such that this plan for the globalization, the end of America, the end of private property, the end of individual liberty, the end of being a human being as a human being,
yes,
is within their reach. And it seems to me we're only a inflation cycle away from...
Yes. Since you've already covered the Security and Prosperity Partnership fairly well, your listeners are a little bit aware of what that is. That's, by the way, they can see that at www.spp.gov. A great government site. You can go learn about, at least some of what they're doing. It's been reported just recently that the Security and Prosperity Partnership has a total of about 20 fully staffed working groups that are covering, each one of them is covering a range of issues that were targeted in that 2005 meeting in Waco, Texas, between the heads of the three countries involved here, Mexico, Canada, and the United States. There's been no press releases out of those 20 work groups, and there's been nothing released. Even the members have been held secret. There's been no, nothing, press releases, press conferences, nothing has come out of this, even though it's obviously a very important thing. The director of SPP was contacted and asked, why is there not any more than just what's on your website? Why isn't this being made public? Her direct quote answer is that we did not want to get the contact people of the working groups distracted by calls from the public. This is the kind of paternalistic attitude that these people have had ever since Tony and I began to interact with them back in the 70s. They're too busy to get distracted by calls from the public. Now, this is the director, Jerry Word, the director of this program that says this. And here's what's interesting. There is no congressional legislation authorizing SPP. Not one bill, nothing. There's nothing been voted on. There's nothing even been suggested. There is subsequently no congressional oversight on these people. Yet, and remember, the Department of Commerce sits under the executive branch. The executive branch is doing this outside of the congressional checks and balances that our Constitution says. And I suggest that since they're dismantling the effectiveness of the Constitution, all of the people who have taken oaths to uphold the Constitution and to bolster the Constitution are acting in a treasonous way by doing these kinds of things to basically spit in the eye of our Congress. It's a real shame. But that's just an example of a recent example of how these people are just doing what they want to do, and the people be damned.
Well, and I can demonstrate the global, if we can call the national government for this purpose, the global force operating as you've just described with this SPP partnership dynamic. You know, in the local towns, like here in Santa Cruz, you get suddenly converged by some politician without any authorization anywhere, a consensus council, a sustainable transportation planning dynamic, where 80 people get leadership training so that they can sell the pitch of the transportation dynamic, and then they go out with their public consensus symposiums, all arranged to a predetermined outcome, and don't let the people talk, but wave a little wand over their head and say, oh, citizens, there might be a few of them in the audience, the rest are all the task makers that have been given the leadership course, and presumably the public-private partnership contracts that come out of a sustainable designed government. But what you end up with is the same kind of unauthorized vesting of real significant power. I mean, in Santa Cruz, we've got a 40-year-old freeway that needs widening, but we're going to get a multi-hundreds of millions of dollars of everybody in the country's money invested in a rail line in this rural community so that we can keep the freeways narrow and clogged as we begin step-by-step taking mobility away, which is a key component to the sustainable end drive, the global governance end drive that Patrick's describing. And here we go, one
yep.
by one. We're the model. The rest of the counties have their own thing going, but ultimately we converge into this global, local, new world order, new political dynamic that
That's
the
right.
schools have already trained every young person for. I mean, even 30 years ago when I was in law school, I mean, I can look back now and see the evidence of the training for what is about to take place in America, which is the elimination of the American vision and the implementation of global governance standards.
Yes.
Right here.
It used to be, as you know, that public servants acted in response to legislation and public initiatives and things like that that were, you know, that are mandated by the people of our country. That went away over the last 30 years to where now the people, you know, these people that get into a position of power, whether appointed or elected, doesn't seem to matter. They cook these ideas up, and they figure, and since they have no public mandate, they figure, well, let's just go ahead and try this and just see who squawks. And if nobody squawks, they win.
Well, you know, I think, Patrick, that has been, that was the view in the 70s when the University of California, fill in any state, graduates came into a community and grabbed hold of the planning apparatus of the county or the transportation apparatus or you name it. They did it. But the swarms came in and have spent 30 years building their power. And what you're describing right now is something that should have been done 20 or 30 years ago. It's too late just to do that.
Yes, it is.
You know, it's time to get a dose of reality and realize that starting with your congressman, including your governor, certainly anybody being mentioned as a
yep.
potential candidate for president.
Everybody from the ground up, because you know what? Your county supervisors, your local politicians are your next state congressmen and state senators. They're possibly appointees and stuff, you know, state appointees, and they're very possibly going to move up at some point into national level. They need to be started on right now while they're just budding, you know, politicians or whatever, and hammered until they get it right. They serve the people.
I think that people need to start running who know these ideas, express
that,
them.
That too. That would be preferable.
Yes. You know, and it may not be an election the first time, but we don't have that many years before the American people are going to have to reassert their liberty, or their liberty and that of their offspring will be foreclosed for, I think, a very long time.
Yes, and it almost looks like this point that we've talked about this before off air that it may well be impossible at this point to wrest control away from these nutcakes that got a hold of our executive branch. But
and the people in our Congress who are compliant with
yes.
every aspect of this sneaky sustainable order that is
possible chance we have, while they don't have a gun pointed at us to completely squelch our free speech with bullets, and we need to let them have it big time. And it may not do any good, but those who don't speak up will have no right to say have anything to say with what they get in the end.
Well,
you know, they just they need to start standing up and speaking out, you know, and doing things like you're doing. You're committing your life to fighting this stuff.
Well,
most people are committing their life to watch TV.
As this political ideology swarms America and the world, and there's no
yes.
voice left, that the people who think they're inside partners with the government now, so they've got a business deal going, maybe their industry does well or their particular business does well because of it, they need to understand that's very short-lived, because this starts to peel back, peel
yeah.
back, peel back. And if you really get to the deep writings of the sustainable developers, those who are motivated by the wildlands application of taking people off of most of the planet's land masses. You know, when you look at these people, people like Dr. Michael Soule, who was up here at the University of California at Santa Cruz, they write, and David Foreman even uses a lower number, but they write that the world's population needs to be reduced to 500 million. That means 93% of everybody alive today, without replacement, needs to be gone.
Yep.
Now that means a world war-torn, you know, the Middle East fiasco is just the beginning of what the globalists at their core. It's a small group. They don't need 6 billion people. They need 500 million to serve their interests. And we're signing up in our communities for these sustainable programs as we go along with the, you know, I always think of them as the Leninites. You know, he talked about the useful idiots. Well, they've suddenly proliferated in and around Santa Cruz, and when I go everywhere else in the country, I see it there too.
Yes. Well, there's one other thing kind of that was on my mind tonight, Michael. I'll just bring it out and just mention it in passing since we still have about 12 minutes left here. This is just was a new article that came out in the Telegraph, Telegraph in the United Kingdom newspapers. Actually, their online paper, but it's the online version of their printed paper. And an interesting article that has not appeared in the U.S. press, to my knowledge, anywhere yet. But it concerns the U.S. Building of an embassy in Iraq. And odd that it would come from the U.K. because they observed this over there. They observed an article in a local paper in Iraq. Some sharp reporter got on this and reported the story. The U.S. is building the largest embassy in the world in Baghdad right now. The largest embassy. Now, we're supposed to be pulling out of Baghdad, right? We're supposed to be pulling out of Iraq. The U.S. is building the largest embassy in the world. It's been under construction for 3 years. It's been held secret even from the Iraqis. And just recently, the Iraqis noticed the construction and got onto it, and they started questioning why was all this land given to them for free instead of having bought it at market prices. It's in the center of Baghdad. The largest embassy in the world in Baghdad. 3,500 construction workers are working on it right now around the clock. It'll be completed in the year 2007. It has 15-foot thick walls around it. It's 104 acres in size. It's almost the size of Vatican City. It has 21 buildings. It's costing well over $1 billion. It'll be staffed by over 5,000 people when it's finally there. And interesting enough, and this is for a place where the United States isn't going to have a big presence, supposedly, and pull our troops out. This embassy is 10 times the size of the current largest embassy in the world, which happens to be in Beijing. I didn't know this. Beijing has a 10-acre compound with 5 buildings and a large staff. They're not embattled over there. They can move outside of the compound. But the Baghdad embassy is going to be virtually 10 times 104 acres instead of 10, 21 buildings instead of 5. And this is going to have a permanent presence for the executive branch, because, of course, it's under the Department of State, which is controlled by, guess who, the executive branch. And this is something that, I tell you what, I issue a challenge to you writers that are listening to this, you researchers. Get after this story and expose it and bring it out. Find out what's going on. What are they building this crazy embassy for over there? What's the point? And we're not getting the whole story.
And no American news media has printed the story.
I haven't found it anywhere yet. The UK, the Telegraph only came out just a few days ago with this story. But I haven't seen anything in the U.S. press yet. This needs to be blown sky high, because what Bush is telling, he's speaking out of both sides of his mouth, obviously.
Well, I think he's doing the same thing on the border.
Yes, he is. And I think people are going to have to catch on to this, that this group of people is so far beyond accountability at this point that they realize that they have, you know, they have the upper hand, and they will do what they darn well please. They don't need any public mandate right now whatsoever, and basically if anybody would dare say anything to them, they scoff at it and call them, a bunch of protectionists and backwards and hillbillies and whatever. In similar fashion, for instance, when DP World, DuBois Ports World, bought the ports or bought the port contracts from the P&O in England to control U.S. ports. When the people of this country stood up and screamed bloody murder, the president of the country had a temper tantrum, on air even, and said he would veto any legislation that blocked this deal. And that, of course, legislator hadn't even met yet, but he swore he would veto anything, and how dare you idiots in the public put our friends down in Dubai. Shame on you. I mean, it's just terrible display of a president. But this is the kind of patronistic attitude they have. They know they have the upper hand. We need to change that for them.
Well, Patrick, we're going to be right back here for our last few minutes of the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio show. We're back at Freedom 21 Santa Cruz with our last few minutes with Patrick Wood and what has been a very enjoyable, entertaining, and thought-provoking 2 hours tonight. Roy?
I wanted to jump in that. When we had Robert Theobald on a little while ago, he said something that I found to be very interesting when he talked about how the British were staying outside of the Europe because they didn't want their money to change. I've had a very similar experience in working with some people. There's some new money in America that looks very European. And I have seen people who I would never thought, look at this money and say, you know what? I don't want this money. I want regular-looking American money. And I think, you know, we Americans are very pocketbook-oriented. But, Patrick, you had a note here about the Henry Paulson's nomination to the Secretary of Treasury that I want to hear from you on.
Oh, boy. I'll tell you what. Don't get me started on this. I get excited. Well, you know, John Snow was the former Secretary of Treasury. He was drummed out of the Corps for whatever reason. His resigning was, anticipated for some time. But Paulson is one of the central people of the financial cabal in globalist banking circles. And to give him charge over the Treasury is the most outrageous conflict of interest that I have ever seen in my 30 years of Washington government. It is absolutely nuts. We're not just talking about the fox watching the hens in the hen house. I don't know what could be. We're talking about Godzilla watching, watching the lizards. This man has the potential to completely turn the Treasury upside down, and there needs to be more light shed on this guy, shine on this guy. His nomination at this point is a shoe-in. Apparently, it looks like it's going to be a shoe-in, and he is at the core of the globalist movement. He is at the core of the international banking cartel, and he has a history of conflicts of interest that he brings in the Treasury that is absolutely. It just leaves one awestruck when you read it. And we don't have time to look at it here. But I encourage people to go on the internet, type in his name, and just see the articles come up, start looking around at some of the, more credible sources.
Hang that thought for a moment.
We'll take a quick break.
We're back here for the last few minutes of tonight's Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio show. If you missed part of this, we'll have it posted up on the website. We'll make this available in CD form so that you can circulate it in your own community. You know, if you're one of those listeners out there across America and you don't know other people who are informed by the Freedom 21 movement, you need to bring the radio show, some of the past shows, into your community, get them played, find out some other people. There are people all over this country who haven't found a place, but they know something's wrong. And do your job in your community. Get the word spread and contact us here at Freedom 21 Santa Cruz. You can call us at 831-684-2232, and we'll get you information that will help you be able to circulate things that people want, people need in your own community. Because, it is a global to local takeover, and the only way American independence and your individuality, your children's individuality, can be preserved is if we fight back at the local level, up through the state houses, on to Washington, D.C., and we simply take the globalist effort, whether it's done by Mr. Rockefeller or Mr. Bush or Mrs. Clinton, you know, or the globalists themselves offshore, we can eradicate this from the American spirit. And if we don't, the American spirit will be eradicated for a very long period of time. Well, that was a great insight you give us on this new Treasury Secretary. As we wrap up, you want to give more focus to that, or do you?
Well, the only thing I would say is that he was he is still actually officially at this point the chief executive of Goldman Sachs, which is one of the oldest investment banking firms in the country. And if you went back and, for instance, read any of Anthony Sutton's books, you know, the document of the transfer of technology from west to east and so on, national suicide, whatever, Goldman Sachs has been right at the center of virtually all the nasty things that have happened in the last 100 years. And, they are what I would call a dirty firm in terms of dealings that they've had with our enemies, industries and companies they built up that never should have been built up in the first place. They are a dirty company with dirty money, and you go back and research. I mean, go read some of Tony Sutton's stuff on it, read other stuff, but Goldman Sachs is one of those companies that you just want nothing to do with, and now this man is going to be in charge of our Treasury. And
for whomever is in charge of the Treasury, you've got to start with a moral standard that's predicated upon certain concepts. And if you're Treasury of if you're Secretary of the American Treasury, you've got to at some point, especially after 90 years of a funny money system, you've got to come to the real effort to establish a monetary system in this country that is worthy of a free society.
And you will see, by the way, you will bump into Paulson and his shakeout from this, or dribble down or whatever, because he is an avid environmentalist, I guess. He's been a long time member of the Nature Conservancy, for instance.
That means that he's a public, a government-private, a public-private partnership kind of guy. That means, you know, that means he's
out of
the camp of Mussolini, only refined by 21st century standards.
Oh, yeah. Yep. He would be a good one, by the way, to tell Americans that they had to turn in all their gold again. And, you know, for the government to confiscate the gold. I'd just say that as speculation, but you know, I think that's probably going to be in the cards someday.
Yeah, at this point, nothing is surprising.
Yes, but watch this guy. Watch this guy like a hawk. Don't you know? Just keep your eyes on him. Watch every press release they put out on him, and I think you're going to find some very interesting stuff that he tries to pull off in the next during his term.
We've got a few seconds left, Patrick. Tell people how they can get your newsletter.
They can get to me by going to www.augustreview.com. It's August, like the month, review, REVIEW.com. Glad to have you read. There's no charge for it. If you want to contribute, you can. It's always welcome. But we don't require it. So dive in, get educated, take the articles, take them out, and, you know, start working other people over, engaging the other side, if you will, that are pro-globalist in their thinking, and show them where, you know, give them the facts and the figures. Show them where they're not.
I recommend theaugustreview.com.
Yep.